Hello, and welcome to Business Talk. Hi, I'm Chris Kellogg from the Kellogg Crew Morning Show on 94.7 WMAS. And I'd like to introduce the host of this week's episode. He's the editor of Business West. Here's Joe Bednar.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Business Talk. We have a great show for you today. Our guest is Delcy Bean, the CEO of Paragus Strategic IT. And we're real happy to have you here on Business Talk, Delcy.
Well, it's so great to be here, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we are honoring you as part of our Difference Makers Class of 2024 on April 10th. That's a big deal. And we'll get into a little bit of that afterwards. But for folks that don't know your story, just tell me how you started in the business of computers, more than 20 years ago, and how it's evolved now into the broad IT provider that Paragus is today.
Yeah, I mean, I like to say I accidentally ended up in this business. I started out in high school fixing some home computers for people that I knew, and then that expanded and expanded, and pretty soon we had a storefront, and we had 1,000 customers. And then I had a decision to make of whether I wanted to shut it all down and go to college or continue to run the business. I chose the latter. And since then, the company has changed and grown quite a bit. We're now about 65 full-time employees. We have 2 offices, one in Hadley, Massachusetts, and one in downtown Worcester. And we serve about 130 small businesses. So we're no longer doing the residential computer repair and helping grandmas set up their printers that we used to do. Now businesses depend on us to, for the most part, be their IT department. We handle everything from the help desk and helping their employees use technology to managing their security and their compliance and all of the things that happen behind the scenes. And then some of the more exciting stuff, like the strategy of how do we use IT better and how do we use tools like AI and automation and business intelligence to be more competitive, to be more efficient, to keep up with a world that is changing very, very quickly.
I wanted to ask you about that specifically. I imagine it's really important for businesses to connect with a partner like Paragus because this field is just so complicated and so ever-changing that I imagine it's difficult for some companies to handle all this in-house.
Yeah, I mean, you'll have a couple of small companies who maybe have 1 or 2 people in-house that can handle some of the help desk or some of the security or some of the more manual administrative tasks. But I don't think there's a business out there. Even the large Fortune 100 companies rely on consultants and experts and advisors because this field is just so broad and it's touching businesses in so many ways. It takes a team of experts with a lot of different experience. And at 65 people, we're able to kind of scratch the surface of all the things that we need to know. But even we are constantly leaning on experts and outside advisors and doing research because it is just such a broad field and it's changing so quickly and businesses are so dependent on it, both for their existence today, but also for their future, that a partner like us is really there to help make sure that you're not missing anything you shouldn't be missing that's going to ultimately come back to, and could potentially hurt the business.
We talked recently for the story I wrote about you for our Difference Makers issue, and you talked about, I guess, maybe a decade or more ago that the residential services was still a major part of the business, maybe even the majority of the business. And it was kind of a risk deciding to, just really focus solely on the commercial side. What was that decision like? And I imagine you're not regretting that now.
Yeah, I certainly don't regret it, but it was a very tough decision at the time. It was about 60% of our business. And it was where the business had started. This was in 2011 that we made the decision. And ultimately, it came down to what do we love doing? Where do we think we could have the most impact? And where do we see building an actual sustainable company? I think back then, it even still kind of felt a little bit like a project or a side gig or something, even though it was a business with employees. 2011 is really when I made the decision, this is going to be my career. I'm going to fully commit to this. And the piece of it that excited me, that motivated me, that gave me energy was the business side. But we also realized we were too small to be both. And so we had to make the brave choice to say, we're going to go all in on this, even though it's a smaller part of the business and we know less about it. And we're kind of making it up as we go along. And we're going to gamble that this is going to be the future of the company. And we did, and it worked, and we're happy with the choice we made.
Now you you expanded into Worcester, was it last year?
So we purchased a company in central Massachusetts in 2021.
21, okay.
And then because it was COVID and everything, we took about a year before we opened up the office. And so we opened up an office in Worcester in 2022.
Okay. So I know you've got plans to expand gradually from there and you kind of have a vision in mind for that. So what is that vision for how and where you'd like Paragus to grow in the future?
So our strategy is that we want to acquire a company in a new geographic market approximately once a year. So we have a couple of deals that we're working on right now as our 2024 acquisition. And the goal is to kind of do that approximately every 12 to 18 months or so and continue to expand the geographic footprint that we're serving, but do so via acquiring businesses that are already in those markets that we can leverage as a starting off point.
You're listening to Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West. We're talking today with Delcy Bean, the CEO of Paragus Strategic IT. Now, as I mentioned at the top, Delcy, you were a, well, you're being honored as a difference maker. But first of all, you were a Business West 40 under 40 honoree in 2008, still one of the youngest ever honorees. And you followed that with other accolades from our magazine, including Top Entrepreneur in 2014, our first ever Alumni Achievement Award winner a year after that, which is given to a 40 under 40 alum. And so now you'll be honored, as I said, on April 10th as one of our difference makers. And that award honors more than business success. It's all about making a positive impact on others. And one way that you're doing that is through an employee stock ownership plan. Tell our listeners about that. It's so exciting.
Yeah. So our journey started in 2013 when I made the decision that I wanted the company to become employee owned. At the time, I had no idea what that meant, but I was sure that I wanted it. I then spent a couple of years really learning and understanding all of the complexities and costs and ramifications and what that process looks like. And in 2016, we announced that 40% of the company had been transferred over to the employees through an ESOP or employee stock option program. Ownership program, sorry. We did that and then grew, and we leveraged that for a lot of things. It helped us recruit better talent. It helped us retain talent. It helped us connect with different clients in a different way. It really contributed to the way that we think about, and I would say that it really enhanced a strong culture that had already existed around this ownership mentality across all of our staff, or partners as we call them. And then very excitingly, in 2024, I completed that journey. And just about a month ago today, we became 100% employee owned. So now all of the stock of Paragus is owned directly by the employees. And I'm just a hired CEO who works for the board of directors and gets W-2 and a paycheck like everybody else. And we're all kind of in this together, trying to grow this together as collective of employees.
I know you had told me that you were, before this all happened, that you started to get concerned that you didn't want to be the only one benefiting financially from the growing success of the company. It was important to you to what was your thought process going into that?
Yeah, it has always struck me in business, and trust me, I'm a capitalist. I believe in business. I think it can be a very strong force for good. However, when it's only really, really good for a very, very small percentage of the population, that argument loses some of its credibility. And so for me, I've always been struck by that outside of my business, but within my business, it's always felt inequitable that we all work really hard. This is not an 8-to-5 for anybody. If you work here, this is a real part of you. And so my feeling was that it should be financially rewarding beyond just that paycheck and the salary and the bonus that everybody receives, and that there should be shared equity in the outcome, especially considering we have very big, ambitious plans and we plan to have a significant growth in the company. And I wanted everybody to partake in that, not just me. And so the ESOP journey was a way for me to accomplish that goal and to really feel like we're all in this together, we're all going to do the hard work, but we're all going to get equally rewarded at the end.
Why do you think more businesses, more CEOs don't look into this? And just, I guess the better question is, how would you encourage CEOs that might be considering this model but might have reservations?
So I think it's important to understand how they work. And unfortunately, they're very complicated. The federal government has yet to create a class of corporation called ESOP. So It's a set of rules applied to other classes of corporations. And the interpretation of how those rules apply is very broad, and they'll get different answers from different experts. So part of it is it just takes a commitment to learning and education. There's a lot of stereotypes out there that I think scare some business owners off. And I think people get an answer from one person and don't think to ask anybody else, because at a lot of times you ask an expert an answer, you're going to get, ask a question, you get the same answer every time. In the world of ESOPs, you get a lot of different answers depending on who you talk to. So I think my encouragement would be, if a business owner is even considering this as a potential way to transition some or all of the ownership Talk to other CEOs who have already done it first and foremost. Gain their experience before you go off and start talking to the consultants, because consultants have their perspective and their view and their kind of goals. I think it's good to talk to CEOs who've gone through the process and hear their stories of what worked, what didn't work, what they wish they could have done differently. I know I've got a list a mile long. And I think that's the best way to really understand what it's like and whether it's for you.
We've talked over the years about employee culture and the importance of it, and I know that the ESOP is a big part of that now. I would like to think that you're successful in hiring people because of all the dogs I see walking behind you, your desk right now. Our listeners obviously can't see what I'm seeing, but there's always dogs in your office. not specifically asking about that, but what kind of a culture do you try to cultivate at your office that makes people want to come into work?
Having good company culture starts with valuing your employees. And I think to your point, the ESOP speaks to that. We value our employees enough to literally give them the stock of the company. So that's the starting point. And that's a good starting point. From there, it's about a lot of listening. So it's asking questions and genuinely listening to the answer of what do you need? What would make your experience better? What are your struggles? What gets in the way of you being more successful? And I think really strong company culture, while the dogs and the beer and the events, they're great, I think that is just the window dressing. If you peel it back, what really makes strong company culture is a company who genuinely cares about their employees, is willing to listen to them, and does their best to try to make that experience one that is positive, rewarding, challenging, and that is gratifying. And if you can do that well, you're going to have a really great culture. And we're very, very careful about who we hire, because our culture is so important to us. And so we look for people who share our core values, who have our same work ethic, who like to work hard and play hard like we do. And when you do that, it just exemplifies and amplifies the culture. And pretty soon it like takes on almost a life of its own.
You know, we're talking about the IT workforce. I'd like to give some love to a couple of programs. I know you were integral in creating Tech Foundry a decade ago, which has trained so many people to enter the IT field, which not only helps people find jobs, but it alleviates a talent shortage in IT and makes it easier for businesses to grow, which is, I know, is important to you. And Tech Foundry recently just spun off into Tech Hub, which teaches people basic computer skills, I believe, so they can access employment. How gratifying has it been to see those programs make a difference in this industry?
One of the most gratifying things I've ever done in my life, I think, and you know, I was a small part of what made that organization successful. There was a lot of incredible people who cared and wanted to see this challenge solved. And the challenge was you've got all these amazing people with passion and desire and willingness to work and industries that need employees, but there's this gap. And all we had to do was build the bridge to connect the gap. And it has been very, very gratifying to see not only the organization's success in the broad picture, but I'll tell you, the most impactful moments are you go to a graduation and you watch those 30, 40, 50 graduates walk across that stage and get their certificate and you hear their stories and the student speakers. That's where the impact is when you hear the individual stories of how it changed not only a person's life, but their family's life. The number of times a parent has gone through it and then the kids went through it, or grandmother, or this, the connections and kind of spiderweb effect of how you really are impacting a community. That's where the real satisfaction and kind of purpose and mission come to play.
I know the industry needs more talent. What would you tell a young person who's kind of considering careers and might be considering IT and among other options to what's the most attractive about working in this field and realizing that the field is so varied?
Yeah, it is varied, but fundamentally it comes down to solving problems and helping people. If you enjoy problems, if you like puzzles, if you like trying to figure things out, and you like helping people, then IT is going to be for you. And there's so many different facets to IT and careers and options and opportunities. But fundamentally, I think those are the people who belong here. You have to genuinely want to help people and you have to like to solve problems. If you want specific career advice, I think AI and automation is the future. I don't think I'm alone in saying that. And I think that young people should start gravitating a little bit more towards that and a little bit away from maybe the legacy technologies like networking that I think is starting to fade a little bit. And we're not seeing a shortage of people who know networking. We're seeing a shortage of people who can do AI automation, intelligence work.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because my very next question I was going to ask about what businesses need to know about where IT is going in the future. So what developments should we be looking for as it relates to AI, VR, automation? I mean, how is that going to change the way we do business?
Yeah, I hate the really dire predictions that, like, if you don't do this, you're going to be out of business. But in this case, I think it's right. You know, I think if you use the analogy of the internet, I'd like you to name how many businesses you know who don't use the internet in any way, shape, or form. I would imagine it's going to be zero. And the AI, if you just use a really broad word, which it is a very broad word, if a business is using zero AI, I don't think they're going to be in business. This is something that you can't just delegate to the IT department or expect somebody else's organization to figure out. This is the C-level team. The CEO needs to have a strategy for how this incredible and powerful technology is going to play a role in the future of that business. And if you're not having those conversations yet, asking those questions, talking to partners, going to webinars, getting informed and educated, I think you're starting to fall behind. And there's still plenty of time, but there won't be for that much longer. So I think now is the time for CEOs, for C-level staff to really get engaged, to ask questions, to get educated, and to start to figure out where does this fit into their business's strategy and life cycle before they get left behind.
For the businesses that do prepare properly, are there things to get excited about kind of the brave new world ahead?
Yeah. What there is to get excited about is all of the industry-specific AI that is coming in the next 18 months. Mostly what we've seen in the general market has been this kind of non-industry-specific stuff like ChatGPT. It's a great tool. I'd highly encourage people to use it, but it's not built for your business. It's what's called generative AI, and it has some very cool features and can do some great things. The next stuff that's going to be coming out is going to be predictive AI, and it's going to be based on your specific niche industry, where it's going to be able to run models and simulations and solve problems within your business or give you hypothetical outcomes to new products or things that you're thinking of developing that is going to be very specific. And we haven't quite seen that hit the masses yet, but it's coming, and it's coming in like the next 18 months, and that's what we need to be prepared for and ready for.
So all this has to be exciting for you as somebody who guides businesses in IT to kind of sort of feel like you're going to be shepherding them into this new era as well. It's got to be fun and exciting, even though it's challenging to keep up with all that, right?
It can be equal parts fun and exciting. Sometimes we feel like we're dragging the horse to water, and other times we feel like we're, you know, alarmist trying to create a sense of urgency that maybe isn't being received. And I don't think we are being alarmist. Like I really do think that businesses have to start investing in and taking this very seriously. And it's the good news is right now it's not that expensive. There's a lot of things you can do with very little investment, very quickly, that can just start to get your organization aligned with and thinking about these technologies. So that's kind of what our focus has been. We actually just launched a brand new program where we just teach people how to use ChatGPT. It's a one-on-one coaching program. We've had huge success and kind of a response to that already. And it's very simple, but it's just getting people starting to use these tools and comfortable with them, but also knowing how to use them safely so they're not exposing confidential or private data. They're not using it for things it's not designed for, where the answers will be wrong, kind of educating them around that type of application.
I guess, and this has been such a great conversation. I always love talking to you. But to close it out, and you might have already answered this in pieces somewhere else, but what do you enjoy most about this work, coming into work every day?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, we work with an amazing group of people. There's not a single person here who I don't enjoy seeing, who I don't look forward to bumping into in the hallway, who I genuinely don't feel like is engaged and connected to this company and is going to care about it as much as I do. The second thing is it's new and exciting every day. You know, no 2 days are the same. We're helping businesses, we're growing, we're doing acquisitions, we're changing people's lives in some cases, we're hiring. There's so many different aspects to the work that there's an opportunity to kind of flex each one of your muscles and a lot of learning and development and growth. I learn more here almost on a daily basis than I think I'd learn in a lot of other places.
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks, Delcy, for spending a few minutes with me. I'm looking forward to seeing you at the Difference Makers event on April 10th.
Dude, thank you so much. I really appreciate the conversation.
And thanks to all of you for tuning into Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West. I'm Joe Bednar, the editor of Business West, and we'll see you next time.